What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. We are two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and I also now write for the LA Football Network. But we are also the host of Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly on Facebook during the season. And now this is our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, we have another fun show for you guys planned today. Of course, we are going to be continuing the AFC East divisional crossover, talking with all of the AFC East teams, well, except for the Dolphins, I guess. But today we get into it with the Locked On Jets. I talk with John Butchko to get into what their feelings are on Sam Darnold for them at this point, now that the Chargers have their own young quarterback, them investing in the offensive line and some more things they did in the draft and free agency. And we're also going to get into some fan voicemails today as well, so you're definitely going to want to stick around for that, as well as getting into the news, which is that one of the Chargers rookies was top five in jersey sales in the NFL. So I think we have to start there, David. So let's go ahead and get into it. CBS Sports came out with a list of the top selling NFL jerseys, and the Los Angeles Chargers had a player rank in the top five. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. In an article done by CBS Sports talking about which players have the highest jersey sales, Justin Herbert, the Chargers' rookie quarterback, ended up in the top five of the list. Number one was Tua Tagovailoa, followed by Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski for fans trying to get their new Tampa Bay Buccaneers jersey, followed by number one overall pick Joe Burrow before Justin Herbert rounded out the top five. And this is a very interesting thing for the Chargers, because obviously when you get a new quarterback and when you're moving into a new stadium, you want that quarterback to be able to be the face of the franchise and sell jerseys as well as tickets. But in this case, the Chargers wanted someone that they would have a high jersey sale number for, and Justin Herbert did that. So I think, David, when you're looking at that, I think that is a positive sign that no matter what happens with Justin Herbert this season, the fans are already excited enough to make his jersey the fifth highest seller in the NFL.
And I think the Chargers did this beautifully. They laid the groundwork for the excitement of the new jerseys very early on. They started with their social media teams putting out little snippets of reactions from key members, from, you know, NFL talk shows, and of course their players like Joey Bosa, really, really revved up that excitement for the fan base. And then shortly before the draft, they unveiled the new jerseys. Everybody loves them. And the new navy blue jerseys that they incorporated. And then they had the 2020 NFL draft. And they pick a quarterback very high. And his jersey sales, after all of that excitement from the fan base, skyrocketed. And he finds himself at number five in the league. So I got to commend the Chargers for the buildup and the success that they found with Justin Herbert's jersey sales.
They definitely succeeded, and one of the important parts of that equation is actually coming through with the jersey that people like. And we see NFL jerseys get ripped all the time, and the Chargers have a very historically good jersey. They have great colors, and the jerseys that they have been almost universally regarded as some of the best in the NFL. So you combine that with a rookie who probably isn't even going to start very soon, which is another part of this, is just fans buying jerseys of someone that isn't probably going to start week one is kind of rare. But then you look at the top of the list and you see Tua Tagovailoa, and that was part of our talk before the draft, David, about Tua Tagovailoa, is the fact that if you get him, his jersey is going to sell like crazy. He's a very exciting player to have. He's won national championships in college football, and he brings all of those teams. And now you see him with the Miami Dolphins, who have been starved for a quarterback for a long time, and it makes you wonder, hey, if those roles were switched, if Justin Herbert was taken by the Dolphins with the fifth overall pick and Tua was taken by the Chargers with the sixth overall pick, would Tua still be the number one selling jersey, or would Justin Herbert actually be higher than Tua?
I mean, that's absolutely a very good question and something obviously we'll never know about. But, you know, the Dolphins have been starving for a quarterback. Like you mentioned, they haven't had a starter really, you know, that they believed in since Dan Marino. So it could very well have been anybody in that situation. But I think they definitely got an exciting player. And, you know, the Chargers got their guy in Justin Herbert. And, you know, he's not doing too bad himself. If you think about all the people that are surrounding him in the top five, Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, the number one overall pick Joe Burrow, these are big, big names. And that's some rare company to be in without any knowledge of what he's going to do in his rookie year. He might not play a single game, but he's done very well for himself in jersey sales before he even stepped foot on the football field.
Absolutely, and I think that one of the more promising things for the Chargers is just the fact that when the pick was made for Justin Herbert, it wasn't a universally celebrated pick. There was many people who wanted Tua Tagovailoa. There were plenty of people that didn't even want the Chargers to take a quarterback with the sixth overall selection. So to see, given all of those facts and given the fact that even though many Chargers fans might not be sold on the Justin Herbert pick, that his jersey is still selling the way that it is when Chargers jerseys in general are not usually ones that you see at the top of these kinds of lists. Their fan base takes the most beating out of any of the fan bases in the NFL, even though I do think there are a ton of Charger fans out there. They're just spread out a little bit more. But this has to be encouraging for the Chargers because it's not only Justin Herbert's jersey sales that are going up. All of their jersey sales are going up because those new jerseys that they released were so well received. They have done a very good job of promoting the jerseys this offseason, and it's paying off for them right now. But we do have two more segments to get into. In the next segment, we're going to be getting into some voicemails about some breakout players next year and much more coming up right after this. But first, I need to tell you guys about the best protein bar on the planet. And of course, I'm talking to you guys about Built Bars. And this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. And I'm glad it is, because if I'm representing something on this show, I definitely want to pick something that tastes as good as Built Bars do, because they do taste like a candy bar. And there's 16 amazing flavors to choose from. And they're all 100% covered in chocolate. They're easy to chew. And I'm telling you guys, it's going to feel like a cheat snack when really it's packed with protein and one of the better things that you can have for you. So if you guys go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On, all caps, one word, you will get $10 off your first order. Again, that's promo code Locked On for $10 off your first order at builtbar.com. All right, guys, well, it's time to get into some more voicemails. So I've been trying to sift through some of the voicemails that we got before the draft, and we have at least one pre-draft voicemail on today's show that is still very relevant today. But thank you to everyone who called in. If you guys want to be the next voice on this segment, the number is 323-524-7924, and every Chargers voicemail gets played on the show unless the host doesn't have time to do all these pre-draft ones right before the draft happens. Now, that don't make much sense. So let's go ahead and get into it, because we have three that I really want to get into today. And first, we have super fan Zach, and we haven't heard from Zach in a while, so I'm definitely interested to see what he has for us this week.
Hey guys, Zach from Florida here. So going a little different route this time. So not talking about rookies or undrafted free agents, and not talking about the players that are always talked about on this podcast, either in a good way or a bad way. Who are some players that are not talked about a lot on the team that you would love to have a breakout season next season and get talked about more in a positive manner for this team? I will just give you two examples for me. Last year's first-round pick, Jerry Tillery, and Uchenna Nwosu, who I would love to see show why he could be the next player to replace either Bosa or Ingram in case one of them does not resign after next season. So I just want to get your thoughts and both up.
So I like this question a lot. I think there are a lot of players that we talk about often, and definitely some lesser known players that if they do well next season, we definitely could be talking about much more in a positive manner. So David, he picks Uchenna Nwosu and Jerry Tillery for this conversation. I think those are both really good picks. But if you're talking about players that you think we could be talking about in a much different light after next season, or players you hope get there, who are you thinking about?
Yeah, no, first of all, I'd like to say I love the guys that he picked, too. And I think given opportunity, both of those guys could really, really excel. But the guy that came to mind right away for me is a guy that is one of John's big favorites, and that's Kaiser White, the linebacker. The safety-turned-linebacker for the Chargers. I just think that given health, you know, that he feels healthy, he feels confident, I think he can do some incredible things in the defense. He's physical, he's big, he has speed, he has good coverage ability. I think if he's out there just being healthy and just thinking, or not thinking and just playing with his instincts, I think he can do some great, great things for the Chargers next year. Another guy that also kind of hinges on health that we've been very excited about is Forrest Lamp. I just think that maybe this opportunity for Forrest Lamp to try out to be the left tackle for the Chargers will reignite something in him and really give him a real opportunity to show what he is capable of doing, show everybody why he was so highly touted coming out of college, why so many people were so excited when the Chargers drafted him. His body hasn't allowed him to really go out there and perform the way he wants to. I want to see what that looks like, and I think that the Chargers' offensive line could benefit greatly from a healthy Forrest Lamp.
Yeah, and hopefully he could actually, you know, kind of find his place on this offensive line, because he hasn't really been able to do that yet. He hasn't found his starting spot, and it's the last year on his contract, so it's kind of now or never for Forrest Lamp. And we talk about Nazir Adderley a lot, but hopefully next year, you know, we can talk about him in more positive terms. And he's another guy who his body held him back last year, and he should be going into this season fully healthy. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I think you could also say the same thing about guys like Michael Davis or Trey Pipkins. If at this time next year we're talking about these guys in a more positive light, obviously you'd have to re-sign Michael Davis, but those would be hugely important for the Chargers. And I think two players that are the most important, you know, question marks this team has right now. So if we're talking about those guys positively, that's definitely meaning things are going right for the Chargers. So let's get into the next voicemail. This time it's Josh in Wisconsin. Let's hear what he has for us.
Hey, this is Josh from Wisconsin. So I don't know if you guys listen to Locked On NFL Draft. You know, I like this show. I listen to it a lot. But it feels to me like they're sleeping on the Chargers. Like, because they were talking about how the Broncos have the best chance to stop the Chiefs this year. And didn't say nothing about the Chargers. They also said the Raiders have a good chance. Didn't say anything about the Chargers. So I looked up last year's scores, and it's pretty clear that the Chargers were the better team last year. The Chargers lost to the highest difference of 10 against Chiefs. The Raiders' highest difference was 31 points, and the Broncos was 24 points. And I understand Raiders got Ruggs, and the Broncos got Jerry Jeudy, and I really don't think Drew Locke is going to make a big jump from last year to this year. And Derek Carr is nothing special. And I understand we are in a bit of a quarterback situation, but I still very much think that the Chargers have the better chance to slow the Chiefs down or beat them. So tell me what you guys think.
So I think, Josh, you're making some very good points here. I mean, I think there's some huge question marks about the Broncos and the Raiders, especially even at quarterback. You know, obviously, many people are doubting the Chargers because Tyrod Taylor is slated to be the starting quarterback at this moment. And I think that means people are sleeping on the Chargers as far as them being able to compete with the rest of the AFC West. I think that the Chargers roster is right up there, if not better, than the Broncos and the Raiders. And yes, they might have more stable quarterback situations, but I don't really love Derek Carr, and I'm not sold yet on Drew Locke either. I thought he showed some good signs, but it's hard to, you know, hold that against the Chargers. So you're looking at last year, both of those teams got blown out by the Chiefs. The Chargers held in and had the largest score be 10 points of a differential, which, you know, obviously they're the last team to beat the Chiefs in this division when they pulled off that 2-point conversion before. So I think he's right, David, that I'm not saying that the Chargers are going to beat the Chiefs, but I think they can be just as competitive as the other two teams in this division.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why everybody's sleeping on Tyrod Taylor, but I want to remind everybody that he's never had this collection of weapons to throw to in his NFL career at any point. He's never had a true star number one wide receiver like Keenan Allen or a big jump ball guy like Mike Williams. He hasn't had a great tight end like Hunter Henry, a gadget Swiss Army knife running back like Austin Eckler. I really think, you know, given his tendency to really protect the football and the weapons that are at his disposal, combined with his escapability and the way Anthony Lynn wants to run his offense, is really going to surprise some people this year. And I think the Chargers now have one of the nastiest defenses in the NFL. I mean, they've had a lot of talent, but they added a linebacker. Now I've said that they have playmakers at every level of the defense. If they're able to mix and match all that talent together, they can play with anybody in the league. So I agree that they're the closest to beating the Chiefs of anybody else. There's just too many question marks with those other teams, and I think the Chargers have more established talent right now. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get it done, but I think they have enough talent to definitely get it done.
Yeah, well, and Gus Bradley's defense has worked over the last couple of years to at least contain that offense somewhat. And I think now it just comes down to, can Tyrod Taylor and this offense keep up? Can they put up enough points to keep the Chiefs at bay? And I think that's a legitimate question mark. But like you said, I think it's just too soon to tell which one of these teams is going to be the biggest threat to the Chiefs until we kind of see it all play out. But the Chargers should be at least be able to hang in those games, because in those games last season against the AFC West, Phillip Rivers was awful. I mean, he was terrible. Like 10 plus AFC West interceptions last year. I think it was might have even been 12. So, I mean, he...
They owned Phillip Rivers, man. They owned him.
And there's a reason they didn't win any divisional games. So I don't think Phillip or Tyrod Taylor will be that bad as far as costing the team games in those situations. But we do have one more voicemail to get into. This is Christian from Arizona. This was a question from before the draft, but I think it's still as relevant now as it's ever been.
Hey, guys. This is Christian calling from Arizona again. And today, I want to go ahead and address the cornerback... Or I want to ask you guys your thoughts on the cornerback position. So the cornerback position is a position that obviously needs at least more depth, but I feel as if the position isn't a jarring need as people seem to make it. In my opinion, I really like Michael Davis, and he's a player that has really gotten better every single season. You guys have mentioned it before, how his overall awareness of quarterbacks throwing in his direction is a problem. Same thing with his tackling. However, I feel like that's things that can be fixed with good coaching. What are your guys' thoughts on Michael Davis? What are your expectations this season? And how bad do you feel the position should be upgraded? Thank you, guys.
So, what we have here is a Michael Davis supporter. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, Michael Davis has definitely shown flashes, and I think I would tend to agree with the fact that he has gotten better. I think we have seen him improve a little bit. And so, David, before I get into what I think about this, what do you think about the Chargers? You know, maybe overlooking Michael Davis or not thinking that's as much of a need as some other people would say.
Well, I think you look at Michael Davis and you get tantalized by the size and the speed and the fact that he was a former wrestler and that he must be able to tackle. But then you turn on the film and you watch Michael Davis and you see some of those traits and you see some of those exercise well, but then you see the missed tackles and you see the not turning your head around, which causes pass interference penalties and also missed opportunities of looking for the football. Then you realize this is why he gets the criticism that he gets. And also, when you have such greatness on the other side in Casey Hayward, that obviously is going to put a spotlight on the corner on the other side because he's going to get picked on more. I mean, obviously, you look at the two corners, who are you going to target more, Casey Hayward or Michael Davis? Obviously, the answer is Michael Davis, and that, unfortunately for Michael, shows some of the flaws. It spotlights some of those flaws that you might not necessarily see if you had a lesser corner on the other side.
Well, and I think there's a chance that Michael Davis, you know, can take another leap this year and become, you know, a decent NFL starting cornerback. And I think, you know, he talked about in this, he thinks that those mistakes, the awareness and the tackling can be coached. But I think the question is, how long do you wait, right? Because at this point, Michael Davis, if he's not already there, is close to the final product, and players can improve and improve. But at a certain point, what you see is what you're going to get. I mean, last season, he missed 15.2% of his tackles. He had a passer rating of only 76, though. So, I mean, you're seeing him improve in coverage. The tackling is definitely going to need some work. But as opposed to 2018, when he allowed a passer rating of 101.6 and 7.8 yards per target, taking that number down to 6.6, even though he missed a few games last year, he only allowed 59% of the passes that he was targeted on to be completed. Those are numbers you think you can work with, but the penalties have to stop. You have to be able to turn some of those jump ball situations into turnovers, which we just saw him get his first interception last year, so he's not doing much in ball production, which is something Gus Bradley has harped on. And I think those are the ways that he has to change. But like you said, it's really about depth. Neither one of Michael Davis or Casey Hayward could potentially be on the roster next year. Michael Davis is on a one-year tender. Casey Hayward is going to have a huge cap number next year, and they're either probably going to restructure it or he could be a cap casualty. So the fact that they just haven't brought anyone in for depth, and the depth right now is Brandon Faison and Tavon Campbell and Dante Vaughn, who couldn't really start for Notre Dame. I mean, that's just not a lot. It's hard to have faith in that right there. I mean, that's just very concerning, especially just for the future of the position for the Chargers, no matter, you know, what happens this season or not. But that is going to wrap things up for the voicemails. We have one more segment to get into because I am talking to the Locked On Jets and their host, John Butchko, coming up after this to get into the thoughts on Sam Darnold, what the Jets did in the offseason, finally addressing their offensive line, which is something that we know a lot about over here, and much more coming up right after this. All right, guys. Well, we are continuing our divisional crossover. This week, we are doing it with the AFC East because the Chargers are playing all four teams from the AFC East this season. And today, I'm joined by John Butchko, the host of the Locked On Jets podcast, to get into all things Jets. But I want to start with something that didn't really happen this year or last year. It's kind of just a more general question because the Chargers now have Justin Herbert, and we're about to kind of experience what it's like to see if you made the right pick in the top 10, kind of like the Jets are doing from a few years ago when they selected Sam Darnold third overall. So I wanted to just kind of get your feelings on what the expectations are, what the thoughts are on Sam Darnold as he heads into year three.
I think for the most part, fans are pretty optimistic with Darnold. Now, if you look at the stats, they've been kind of up and down, but I think you have to put them in context. The Jets have not done a good job surrounding Darnold with a quality supporting cast. Their offensive line last year was one of the worst in the NFL. Darnold was pressured, I think, around 40% of his dropbacks. The wide receiver core was kind of mediocre. I mean, you had Robbie Anderson, who they lost in free agency, was a good deep threat. You had Jamison Crowder, who's a solid slot receiver, but there really were not a lot of great pieces around him. I think the offensive coaching staff, it's unclear how effective they're going to be going forward. I don't think you can say Adam Gase came in and did a good job a year ago. And the other part of this is Sam Darnold was really supposed to be in this year's draft class. He actually is younger than Joe Burrow. So I think if you just look at the numbers, Darnold doesn't look that impressive. But if you look in context, I think all things considered, for the most part, he's held his head above water. For a guy that young being put into that kind of situation, I think most Jets fans are pretty optimistic about where he's going.
Well, and last year was kind of a hard year to judge, too, with the whole mono thing and all of that. So I feel like it's kind of a convoluted conversation. But I think there's definitely some things to like there, and Chargers are going to be looking for those things now with Justin Herbert. So one thing that you touched on there is the offensive line, and we'll get into how they helped that in the draft a little bit later. But you could tell that going into this offseason, the Jets had a plan to add a bunch of offensive linemen, and that's what they did. So what did you think of the front office kind of finally putting an emphasis on the front – on the offensive line, even if it means, you know, having a lot of bodies in that room?
Right. And they were fairly aggressive in free agency, bringing new guys in. I think the best signing they made was Connor McGovern, the center from the Denver Broncos. Center has been a really tough spot for the Jets ever since Nick Mangold retired after the 2016 season. They tried Wesley Johnson, who was Mangold's former backup in 2017. That did not work out. A year later, they signed Spencer Long from Washington. That did not work out. This past year, they brought in Ryan Khalil out of retirement from the Carolina Panthers in the summer. That did not work out. They've really, a lot of the woes on the Jets offense have been based on shaky center play. So I think they're hoping, I guess, the fourth time of the charm with McGovern. They made some other signings. They brought in George Fant from Seattle, a tackle who has some upside. He was mostly a backup with the Seahawks, so he's kind of a projection. They brought in a guy, Greg Van Roten, a veteran journeyman from Carolina, who's developed into a solid player. So I think they brought in guys who can help. But I think the most important move that they made was drafting Mekhi Becton with the 11th overall pick. This was the first time the Jets have used a first-round pick on the offensive line since 2006. And it's the first time they've used a pick in either round one or round two in a decade since 2010. And you look at the Jets' offensive line struggles last, and I mean, it was unbelievable how bad this line was at times. I mean, there were points early in the season where they could not even pick up a stunt. And it doesn't get to that point unless you have failed to invest in premium young talent. And I think as much as you hope that some of the veterans coming in will help, and the jury's out on some of these guys, we'll have to see how they gel together. We'll have to see whether they can maintain their performance. I think the most positive element is just the Jets acknowledging that they need to bring in young talent and they need to develop young talent on the offensive line, because that's something that's been lacking.
Yeah, and that's why I love doing these shows, especially because you can almost always find some commonalities between the two teams. I mean, the Chargers have been trying to put together an average offensive line for over a decade. They haven't drafted, or they've drafted one offensive lineman. It was DJ Fluker in the first round in the last like 30 plus seasons. So I definitely get what you're saying there. So I definitely think that it was nice that they really invested in that offensive line. And I think that was a huge draft pick and a guy that a lot of Chargers fans wanted in Mekhi Becton. But they also made a really big pick in the second round. We talked about their need at left tackle and on the offensive line, but you also kind of mentioned how paltry that wide receiving core was for the Jets over the last few seasons. And Quincy Enunwa obviously has dealt with a lot of health things, and they thought he was going to be a promising player, and that's kind of a little bit more murky now. But what did you think when the Jets decided to take Denzel Mims, a guy that many people thought was going to go in the first round, ended up falling to the Jets in the second?
Yeah, a lot of good points you just made. Enunwa, I think last week they announced officially Enunwa will not play in 2020. As far as Mims goes, I think there were two needs that stood out among everything else on offense. One was the offensive line, the other was wide receiver. So heading into this draft, it kind of felt to me like the Jets were likely to take an offensive lineman in the first round and a receiver in the second round. And that was just looking at the strength of the respective positions in the draft, because the general consensus was that there was a pretty big drop off between the first tier and the second tier at the tackle position. Whereas the wide receiver position, there was not as big of a drop off. So you could still get a guy who was kind of viewed as a premium talent in the second round. And there were also rumors that the Jets were thinking about potentially trading down. They originally owned the 11th overall pick. And in that scenario, I thought Mims was a guy who could have been an option. So right. It was really surprising to see him fall all the way, not just to the Jets pick in the second round, but the Jets actually traded down in the second round and got him. And I'll tell you that on draft night, if you were following Jets fans online, around the mid-30s, there was a sizable portion of the fan base that was saying the Jets need to trade up 10 spots to get Denzel Mims. So the fact they were able to trade down 11 and still get him and pick up an extra third-round pick, which they eventually traded for a pair of fourth-round picks, it's close to a dream scenario. Mims is a guy who, I mean, he's got all the tools you're looking for in a potential number one receiver. There are some questions, you know, does he need to develop a little bit his route running? Will he be able to contribute day one? You know, some people feel like his route tree at Baylor was not that broad, so he's going to have to learn how to do some things. Other people look at his Senior Bowl performance and they saw him run a full route tree and really take to new routes well. So it's not clear how much he's going to do as a rookie this year immediately, but a guy long term could potentially be a number one receiver for this team.
Yeah, well, and it's a hard transition. I mean, the Chargers learned that with Mike Williams. He had some injuries and stuff as well, but you talked about just not investing, you know, quality picks into these positions, and now at least you have the guy with all of the talent in the world. You invested in a supremely talented player, and I think that's really all you can ask for from the Jets front office, and getting it the way they did. I mean, obviously that's best case scenario, because I was looking at him as a guy the Chargers could target in the second round at 37th overall before they traded away. But moving into the rest of the draft, I know those are the two guys that really get all of the glory as far as the big names in the draft class. But there was a bunch of, you know, sleeper picks, guys that, you know, a lot of analysts were very high on that the Jets picked later on in the draft. So which one of those guys are you most excited to watch? Because there's a lot of intrigue in those later picks.
Yeah, I think it would be Bryce Hall, who was the fifth round pick out of Virginia, who a lot of analysts had as either a second round pick or a third round pick. He suffered a serious injury near the end of his college career. And I think just because of the situation, because teams were not able to bring these players in to get a look at allow the medical staff to get a look, I think he may have just fallen for that reason, because talent wise, I can't find an analyst who thinks this was anything other than a steal getting him in the fifth round. And I'll give you the second guy is Cameron Clark, who's an offensive lineman out of Charlotte, who he played tackle last year in college, probably going to kick inside to guard in the NFL. And just back to the theme of the Jets not investing in the offensive line, they picked Clark in the top 130, which means that they have a new general manager this year, Joe Douglas. So in Joe Douglas's first draft, he used two picks in the top 130 on offensive linemen. His predecessor, Mike Maccagnan, was with the Jets for 5 years. In 5 years combined, he used one pick in the top 130 on the offensive line. Oh, so Jets at least investing in the offensive line a little bit. It's a refreshing change of pace.
Oh, yeah, man, I bet. I would love that. I'd love to see offensive linemen getting drafted. And I think really with those two guys, another thing you're seeing is kind of the attitude they want to have, because those are two of the more nastier finishers of the guys that I watched on tape this season. I mean, those guys, I mean, they come with an attitude and they love to pancake people. So I think those will be really exciting players to watch for you guys. So obviously, I know there's still some time. Adjustments could still be made before the start of the season, but now you kind of have an outlook of how the Jets have really tried to fill in this roster throughout this offseason. So now that you see a closer thing to the final product, what are the biggest concerns that you have? What are the biggest weaknesses that you're concerned about going into the season?
You know, I think there are a number of areas that are question marks. I think I appreciate the focus on the offensive line, but whenever you're bringing in this many new pieces, there's a question of how quickly they will gel together. I think the wide receiver position could be good if everything pans out, if Mims produces as a rookie, if Breshad Perriman, who they signed from Tampa Bay, pans out. He's kind of a wild card, so you look at the another key guy, Chris Herndon, who was a tight end, flashed quite a bit as a rookie, had a good rookie season. Last year was really a lost year. He started with a 4-game suspension, got hurt right before he was supposed to return from the suspension. After he finally got back into the lineup, got hurt again his first game back, missed the rest of the year. He played one game last year. So questions about whether Herndon can produce. So lots of wild cards. And then you look at the defensive side of the ball. There's not really a great edge rusher right now. And the corner position is kind of up in the air. You know, Bryce Hall, who we mentioned, he could be in the mix for a starting job, but you never really want to count on a late round rookie, even a guy as talented as him who may have been an earlier round pick. You never really want to count on as a rookie. It's probably going to be an open position battle. I'm not sure who's going to win that job. So I mean, I think you look at the key spots on the field for the Jets. There are lots of question marks. There are lots of guys who could produce. You know, I mentioned some of the receivers. If all the offensive linemen play up to their potential, the line could be pretty solid. And if Bryce Hall's ready to step in day one and hold down a starting role at corner, it could all work out. But these are really important positions. And at almost all the really important positions, there are at least some question marks. There are some things up in the air.
Yeah, and I think that's the same with the Chargers, too. I mean, they brought in a lot of new pieces on the offensive line, but chemistry is such a key thing, and that's just something that takes a little bit of time and is not just a given, even if you're adding talent. So thank you so much, John Butchko from the Locked On Jets podcast, for coming on the show today. I think we got a really great insight to everything going on with that offseason. It should be a really fun matchup when these two teams face off in 2020. So thanks again, John. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Look forward to chatting once these teams play in the regular season.
All right, well, another thank you to John Butchko. You can find the Locked On Jets podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Special thanks to him. We will continue with the AFC crossover throughout the rest of the week. But thank you for listening to today's show. Until tomorrow, guys, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC. And you can also follow us individually. For me, I'm at DanTalkSports. And David Drogemeyer is at DDroSports on Twitter. You can also like our page on Facebook, Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts or giving us a follow on Spotify. We would really appreciate it. Until next time, guys, if you want to get your voice on the show, the number is 323-524-7924. We hope you keep the good voicemails coming. We need some more to keep on doing that segment. So we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Until then, take it easy and go Bolts.